Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to the Love Freak podcast. I'm Courtney Cole, and I am really excited for our time together today. I am here with my friend and singer-songwriter, Kelsey Kulick. You might have heard her on the radio. Her single, Who I Was, reached top 40 on Canadian country radio at the end of last year. Thought it was she's just another artist who I have all the respect for in the world. She writes these honest, healing songs from just the true depth of her being. And her music just pings that honesty and that self-awareness inside of me. And it's just something that I really relate to and I really understand. And it just brings me clarity and healing in my own journey. And today we are going pretty deep. We're going to be talking about a lot of things. We cover everything from people pleasing to boundary setting to the manifestation of divine energy. And we also talk about a lot of the realizations that she had through her healing process and her battle with cancer. So, yeah, deep stuff. This conversation is seriously, it's so real and honest and hopeful. And we're just processing through each of our own life experiences with the arrow kind of pointed in the direction of renewal and higher vibrational alignment and connectivity with source. So let's do this. Kelsey, it's awesome to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Courtney, it's awesome to see you too. Thank you for having me.
And it's Kelsey.
Not Kelsey. Yeah.
Which is probably a common misconception you get all the time.
All the time. Actually, it's not even, people say my name wrong all the time. It's like Casey or Kaisley or Halsey. And I'm like, no, it's Kelsey. Just like Kelsey. I'm like, my mom wanted me to be different. So I'm like, thanks for that, mom. I appreciate it.
I love it. It's a really, really cool name. Kelsey Kulick.
Yes, you got
very,
it.
Very,
yes.
Very, very neat. So you released a single back in August called Who I Was, and it's freaking awesome. And that's freaking F-R-E-Q. I have to stay on brand here, staying on brand. No, but it really is. Like it really makes me feel something. And people who are probably listening to this podcast right now and listen on a regular basis are probably like, Courtney loves everything. But truly, like, I love this song, and I'm so lucky to have this podcast where I have the opportunity to talk to people that I'm just genuinely like a major fan of. So I feel really blessed. I'm a big fan of yours, and your music just has so much heart.
Thank you.
Yeah. So can you kind of tell us about that song, what it's about, and what inspired it?
Yeah, you know, I wrote that song right actually before everything happened with COVID. So I wrote it with Jeff Trott. And for everyone who doesn't know him, he's the producer, and he's written songs with Sheryl Crow and stuff. He's a really cool guy. He's kind of like a little Yoda sitting in the room, and you kind of like, he's just so cool. He's such a good hang. And so we probably talked for about, I don't know, I would say the first 2 hours, we probably just talked, and we just really, cause we never met each other before. So we're just kind of like getting to know each other. And it was just kind of weird. And I just kind of had this like little, it was like almost like an epiphany moment really. And I wasn't really, I didn't have a title, nothing like that. And I just started playing on the guitar and started singing. And we wrote that song pretty quickly. I think it was like 45 minutes and it was done. And yeah, it was kind of just one of those ones that just kind of like fell out. And it was definitely like, I think I even shed some tears when I was writing it. Like it was just kind of, I don't know if it was like an emotional release or what it was, but yeah. So it's cool to hear you say that you like, you know, connected with it. Cause it definitely, I think it was an emotional write for me. And I don't really know what it was or where it came from, but it was something that I needed to get out and into the world. So I was really happy when the label wanted to, you know, record it and everybody was kind of behind it. So yeah, it was definitely a cool opportunity to release that song, and a lot of people connected with it. So I'm excited that it got out.
Yeah. It's just, it's very honest, mm-hmm. you know, and it's about, we've all been there in our relationships where we're people pleasing, where we're kind of denying ourselves in order to show up for somebody else. And
totally,
you know, I am totally a people pleaser. And so in every aspect of my life, like it's not just in my relationships, but just every aspect. So when I heard that, I felt very attacked. That song, I'm like, oh my gosh, no, wait, this is totally me. Like I'm raising my hand. I'm the people pleaser, you know?
Yeah, totally.
But I think it's really, really common, a really common fear of abandonment that comes in, you know, with relationships, romantic or just, you know, friendships. Do you consider yourself a people pleaser?
Oh yeah. 100%.
Really?
100%. Yes. Like ever since I was little, like, you know, if somebody didn't like me for a reason, like that they just, because they didn't like, you know, didn't like me, you know, just because they didn't yeah. like me for no reason. I'm always like, why don't you like me? Like, what did I do to you? You know? And I've been like that ever since I was young. And, you know, I think that's one of the hardest things I think to get over is like a people pleaser, being a people pleaser, you know, like,
well, it's true. Nobody wants to be rejected. Mm-hmm. Right. And everybody wants to have that feeling of love and acceptance or whatever. But I do think that there's like, it all stems from somewhere, you know, like there's like just that general basic need, human need, but then I think it kind of gets developed over time. So I was kind of curious, like, what is it for you? I can think of a specific thing in my life that kind of molded me into that sort of conditioning. Like, do you have that moment?
I don't know if I do have that moment, to be honest. I think like, I was the oldest child, you know, I was always, I think, constantly looking after my sister and all that sort of stuff. And I think I was the oldest child for such a long time. So I always wanted to make everybody happy, you know, all of the yeah. adults around me in my life. And like, they were all like, I had a great upbringing and all that sort of stuff. You know, my family was amazing, but it was just, I think maybe it was just wanting to make my family happy. And then, you know, I hated when other people were sad. Like I remember being in kindergarten and walking up to my one friend who was crying because it was the first day of kindergarten. She didn't want to leave her mom. And I just like walked right up to her and I was like, what's wrong? Are you okay? What do you need me to do? And it was just, I don't know if it was then, but like, I mean, I've always just, ever since I was little, there's like even videos of me when I'm like 3 and 4, where I'm just, it's just something, I don't know what it is, but yeah, I've been like that for even before I can remember. So I honestly don't know.
That's so funny. Like I think back in my life where, you know, I've had problems in the past growing up, you know, with my dad, and there's, you know, I feel like people who are people pleasers a lot of times kind of develop sometimes these codependent attachment styles. And it usually stems from having to please the parents, you know, mm-hmm. Because what happens when your parents are pleased with you, they're proud of you and they love you and they show it and they're not distracted, you know, and there's kind of like a closeness that comes from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times there are parents out there who aren't consistently there for their kids, and the kids are constantly just like striving to just achieve that closeness and that love from their parents. And they'll do anything to try and make that connection feel stable and consistent. And then this kind of carries on into life. And then, you know, you might have to live out, like you might even live out one of your parents' dreams or one of their expectations of you in order to like gain approval from them. Or then you have these relationships where, you know, that becomes like a pattern and it's a conditioning. And then you have these relationships where you feel like you have to do the same thing in order to keep love.
Totally.
And that could be friendships too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we end up just kind of becoming what others expect of us rather than listening to who our soul kind of wants us to be.
Yeah. Totally. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, like I would even wake up sometimes and I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to say yes to people today. I have to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to work on what I need to. And when someone asks me to do something, like someone will come along and they'll ask me and I feel so much guilt. saying, no, I can't help you, so much that I'll say yes. And even though I'm like, I said I wasn't going to do that, but I just can't.
Totally. I totally agree. You know, it's actually kind of funny because so there was like a, so I went through like a breakup that I was with this person for like 8 years, and I wrote who I was after the breakup. And it was like, I don't know, maybe it was like a bunch of feelings coming up. And that I think I stayed in the relationship because I knew that I didn't really love this person. And I stayed in the relationship because I felt like, you know, it was my responsibility to make him happy. You know what I mean? That's kind of how it was. Yeah. And I think after that relationship, I just kind of realized I do not want to make anybody happy but myself now, you know, because you feel like you lose so, like, I lost so, like, just so much opportunity, not even like opportunity in music, but just like opportunity to grow for myself in the time that I was focusing on someone else and trying to make them happy and bring them happiness and all that sort of stuff. And you don't even realize that. And the person that is needing you for that doesn't even realize that they're using you for that as well. So you don't even really realize that you're doing it to yourself. They don't realize it, that they're doing it to you. And then, like, I think like right after that was when I was kind of like, cut the people off that are not going to use me for that anymore. And I think it's like a constant progress, but slowly and surely, more and more as I've like gone through that, I've realized that like this life is about me, you know, and it's about making myself happy and finding my own happiness. And when I'm happy, then everybody else is going to be happy. So I think that relationship was a huge learning lesson for me. And it really changed me after not having it anymore.
Yeah. I want to go back to what you said, because I think this is an important point. Like, you don't even think that people realize that they're taking advantage of some of those things. And it's like, you can look at the, look at yourself and realize, wow, this is really kind of stemming from me. Because over time, whether people realize it or not, they become so normalized by you being a doormat that when you do say no, you know, they think something's wrong, or they think the narrative's changed, so that you're being a bad friend or you're being a bad girlfriend because the scenario shifted and they aren't getting what they need anymore, or you're not serving them in the way that they enjoy or prefer.
Totally.
So yeah, it's interesting, because when you can look at that, you can say, wow, this was all stemming from me. This was a belief system and a conditioning that I created within myself and am kind of putting out into the world. So when you kind of shift that and you do start to form those boundaries, 100%. I think that's when people start to have that respect for you, and they start to realize like, oh, this is just, she's taking care of herself. That's great. And then people don't care.
I do think that there is the people that are like, she's taking care of herself, that's amazing. But then there are the people that don't like that you're taking care of yourself and that you are not allowing them to treat you like garbage. And then they're like, oh, I don't like this. And then they never talk to you again. Because I also had that where like, there was some like family members that were just like not kind people. And I was just like, and they're like extended family members, but it was like, but every time I was around them, I always felt like so drained. And I always had to like, I always felt like I had to like bite my tongue, like from their ignorance, you know what I mean? Yes. And then I would just leave like so angry that I never stood up for myself or never said anything. And so I had this like huge like blow out, and I don't do that, like that's not something that I do, but it was like, you know, I was like after like my way like after my breakup and like way after my breakup, but it was kind of like I was going through this transitioning phase where I was realizing that I wasn't gonna let people treat me like that anymore.
Yeah.
And I think it was the first time that I seen those people that like that I actually was in contact with them since the breakup. And so I just exploded, which is, I don't want to do that. I'm a very peaceful person. I like to be peaceful, but it was like, it was so crazy. But also too, like, you know, I don't talk to those people anymore. And I realized that I'm, better for it. I feel better for it. And they don't talk to me for it when they hold it and they're holding a grudge because they're, you know, mad because I didn't, you know, allow them to treat me as the way that they were used to being like exactly. treating me the way that I was used to them treating me. And they just, so it's just, you know, and then you just feel like, oh, I feel so much better now that I don't have those people in my life.
Oh yeah, I know. And sometimes it's nice where it's like, you just get out of balance. You're kind of like on that seesaw where it like flips all the way to the other side. And you're just like, wow, there has to be something where everybody's kind of balancing here in the middle and everybody's taking care of what they need. And I'm taking care of what I need and we can all balance there. And it's nice when you can kind of correct those relationships and set them straight away. But sometimes, like you said, people just, they're not comfortable with that because they can sense that on you that they can take advantage of you and they will, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when you can't do that anymore, they don't have their MO. So, I love Byron Katie. Do you ever listen to Byron Katie?
No, I've heard of her, but I've never listened to her. No.
Oh my God. Okay. You need to go read her books and listen to her on Instagram. She's amazing. And she kind of had this wake up call, like when she was in her, I don't know, I think like in her 60s, late 50s or 60s or something like that, like later on in life, where she realized that she just sat in her pain and sat in her, you know, being miserable for so long. She woke up one day cause she was laying on the floor crying and a cockroach crawled across her foot. And she was like, what am I doing with my life?
Yes.
And literally she's had all these like beautiful epiphanies, but she was on Oprah's podcast a while ago.
Wasn't she, was she that? Oh no, maybe not. Was she on The Secret or was she not?
No, she was not on The Secret. No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
But she was on Oprah's podcast and she was telling this story. Oprah was saying something about how people have taken advantage of her financially every once in a while, or like family members come to her and ask for money or whatever. And it's gotten to the point where it's been unhealthy. And Byron Katie is just like, when people come to you and they ask for something that is too much of for you to give, that denies yourself in a way, or that hinders you in a way, or you don't feel comfortable with, let's practice. All you do is say no. So, Byron Katie was like, okay, Oprah, you come to me and you ask me for something. And so Oprah did. And Byron Katie just went, no. And Oprah was like, that's it? She's like, yeah, that's it. You don't owe anyone any explanation. You just say no. That's it. And that's self-care for you. Like nobody needs to know why. It just has to be okay for you. And I thought that was so amazing. And I think about things in my life where I'm like, I feel like I have to over explain. I have to show people why it's okay for me to defend myself. And I'm like, no, just say no. That's mm-hmm. it. That's where you're comfortable. Like, wow, that's so easy and simple.
Yeah.
I'm going to try that.
Totally. It's so true. 100%. Yeah. It's almost like a, I totally agree with you. And when I say no, I feel guilty and it's still, but it is empowering when you do say no, it definitely is because you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, no, sorry. Just because no reason. And it's, I don't need to give you an explanation. That makes me smile because it's so true. And like for a people pleaser though, it is the hardest thing in the world to do.
You know? Yeah. But that's where, like, that's what I'm trying to practice doing. And it's so uncomfortable in the moment when if you ask me for something right now, you ask me to do something, I'm too busy. And I just said, ah, Kelsey, love you. No.
Yeah.
I would, like, even saying that, I have anxiety building up in me right now because I feel like you're looking at me going, wow, that's really selfish. You know what I mean? But it's like, No, I have to set a certain boundary for myself. And we understand each other enough to know that like, I love you, you love me. And we're doing the best we can for each other. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just a weird boundaries are a weird thing.
Totally. It is. But it does feel good. Like once you do set them, like there's like a, like my dad's partner, she has been kind of like this person who just feels that she has the right to like get respect for me, even though she doesn't respect my sister or I. And there's just a moment, probably a few weeks ago, because we found out like that, that we were pregnant. So we surprised my dad.
Congratulations,
mostly.
By the way.
Oh, thank you. So we surprised my dad, and she was on the call, which obviously not a big deal, but she's caused like a lot of drama in the relationship that I have with my father. And my dad and I before, and my sister, like the three of us have always had like a really good bond. Like we're just, you know, we talk to each other every day. Like, you know, we are allowed to see each other, but like, you know, it got to the point where like when I would go to visit my hometown where my dad lived in, I would have to go and meet my dad, because my dad's a truck driver. So my dad, he hauls wood. So he goes to a place, goes to the mill, and it's all within Hudson Bay limits. It's about like probably like a 3 or 4 hour ride by the time everything's said and done. So he does that 3 times a day. Anyways.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, it's crazy, but you know, he's pretty busy. He works like 12 hours a day. But anyways, when I'm there, like she's always, it's like she doesn't want us around for some reason. I don't know what it is, but it's really ridiculous. And so it got to the point where like we would have to, like I went to go and meet my dad at the mill, because my aunt works at the mill. She works at the scale office. I'd park there. I'd hop in with my dad, and that my, like, to be able to chat with him and just be able to just like have a relationship with my dad, I would have to go when he was working. You know what I mean? Like I'd have to go and like sneak in the truck with him. We'd have conversation, laugh, you know, whatever. Aww. And then he would drop me back off at home. So that's the type of person she is. She's very controlling, manipulative, and it's just awful. Wow. And so there was a point where it's like, she's like, so I sent my dad a grandpa t-shirt is how I told him. Aww, and it's like, and it said, my dad loves fishing. And so I sent him a little onesie and it said, grandpa's little fishing buddy. And he's like, so excited. I was like, can you send me a picture like of you wearing the shirt? And, Leanne was like, well, not until I get my grandma shirt. And so it was just like, and then my sister was there visiting, and my sister got into this huge blow up fight and with her, because she was saying all these ridiculous things. And my sister was just like, hey, we just want a relationship with our dad. Like you need to back off. And dad kind of didn't really say anything, because my dad's the type of person, he doesn't like confrontation. And so, my sister and I didn't talk to my dad for 3 weeks, which is like the longest we'd ever gone without talking to my dad. And then like my husband, who his dad is like a counselor, and he's been one for his, like ever since my husband was like a baby. And, you know, so he knows a lot about like psychology and why people do the way that they do. And so Eric called my dad, and he's like, listen, Johnny, he's like, we want you to have a relationship with us, and we want you to have a relationship with our child that's coming. He's like, but is not allowed to, have a relationship. Like that's the boundary. She will never have a relationship, and not now, not ever. And it was really good to be able to set that boundary, because my dad obviously really wants a relationship with his grandkid. Sure. And he wants a relationship with his own kids. And, it feels so good to not have that draining energy out of my life. But that's like another example about how in my life, like you cut people off that are toxic and that do not bring joy or goodness into your life. And my dad and I, now we talk every day. He, you know, FaceTimes me, and it's just like, it's back to normal. And even when he's around, I went back home for a couple weeks because my grandpa just passed away. So I went to go be with my grandma, and my dad came out to my grandma's, and it was just like normal, you know, and that hadn't been like that in the longest time, years. It hasn't been like that.
Oh, you have your dad back.
Yeah. And you know what I mean? So like once it's kind of like it shows you that when you do something for yourself, like, you know what I mean? I cut off that energy, the bad energy that was like draining me and really weighing on me. And I got rewarded for it. You know what I mean? Like if I have a relationship with my dad now, that I haven't had in years. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, so I think that sometimes it's hard to cut people off and it's hard to say no, and it's hard to do all that sort of stuff. But in the end, it is makes a huge difference. And, you know, when you do something for yourself, the universe rewards you, you know, you did a good job. This is a good thing.
Yeah. And it's hard with family, you know, but at the same time, it's like, there's a lot of people who kind of normalize the thing that's like, you can't cut somebody off just because they're family or whatever. And it's like, well, you also can't allow somebody to treat you terribly and make it okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they're family or not. It doesn't matter. You know, you have to take care of yourself and your boundaries and your mind and your sanity and your clarity. And I've had to do that, unfortunately, with a very close member of my family just in the last couple weeks. And it's been so confronting, so hard, but it's amazing the space that has been opening up in my energy for that. And it allows me to have the space now to heal. And I think that's probably the same for you, where it's like, you can try and make relationships like that work with people over and over and over and over and over again. But if they're not willing to help you heal, and they're not willing to be there for you, they're just going to keep ripping that wound open and open and open until you can say no more.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter if that's family or not. You have to say no more. It's time for me to heal. And I would love for you to step onto this healing train with me. Yeah. But if not, I got to keep moving. Mm-hmm. Because you can't lose yourself, and you can't love somebody at the demise of loving yourself. So I'm glad that you found healing in that relationship with your dad. I'm sure that's
Thank
so
you.
Wonderful and so
yes. It's worth good. It. It's really good.
We jumped super deep, super into like the deep stuff, and I love it so much. But
Me
I want to know, where are you from?
I'm from Hudson Bay, Saskatchewan,
Hudson Bay.
Canada.
Okay, you mentioned that. Okay.
Yeah.
And what was your passion as a kid? What did you love to do?
Music, 100%. Like, I started singing when I was 3. And it just, I mean, that's all I ever did. And so, yeah, music was, I did it. Like, we went to fairs and competitions and, you know, contests and all this sort of stuff, like, ever since I was 3 years old. So it's been ingrained in me, like, ever since I just love it. So.
I love that so much. So you are were you writing songs too?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you were writing songs from an early age too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little creator.
Yeah. I wrote my first song, quote unquote, when I was 5, and I wrote it for my mom. And, I think the reason that I started writing, I mean, I always loved music, but like writing will always be a healing process for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm typically like not a good, like I'm a very emotional person. So like, and I hate crying. And so if I tell somebody how I feel, I will always cry. And then I'll be like, and I can't talk when I cry, but I can't say what I'm feeling. like unless, like, you know what I mean? Like it's the crying and the feelings, they go together, like talking about my feelings and crying. So I won't be able to process it. So what I do is I just write it down on paper in a song, and then it's out of me. And then I'd be like, oh, you want to know how I feel? Okay, here's how I feel. And I'll play it on guitar and I'll sing it. But that's why I started writing, is because just to, like, the first song I wrote for my mom, it was just to tell her that I was like, you know, that I loved my mom so much, like that I was so grateful for her, basically, is what the song was about. And
so that's how you processed your feelings.
Yes. Yeah. Still
wow.
is.
It still is.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's so interesting how that was always your way, because it comes out so clearly now. Like, I don't know, your songs just, they hit me in a place that just feels very real. So, and relatable. So that's how you know that it's coming from that place for you. Like, you're processing the same feelings that I think a lot of us probably are, you know? Mm-hmm. And you just have a really, really beautiful way to do it. Are
Thank you,
are you making that little girl proud today?
Oh, I would say so. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, I'm so stubborn, and I don't know if I was always that way when I was little, but, you know, I mean, I used to be that little kid, you know, how like people talk about, like they would accept their awards, like in, you know, holding their whatever in their bedroom. I did that. my Barbie doll. 'Cause I never played with Barbie dolls. I just used them for microphones.
I wonder if we were in the same, like cosmic award show, because I was doing the same thing too.
I love it. Totally. No, seriously though. You're like, don't even know that you're manifesting at that age. Right.
Isn't that funny?
Yes. It's amazing. It's so great. And,
actually, I want to touch on that, because I think that there is like a real lesson in manifesting when it comes to being a kid. And, you know, it says all the time, just in scripture, with like the Bible, everything, like faith, like a child, right? You can learn so much from kids, because the walls down, the barrier.
Yeah.
And I think that's why at the beginning of this podcast, I always talk about, remember the passions you felt doing that particular thing you always loved to do as a kid. Those passions are gifts of clarity. They're desires of your heart authentically expressed. And it's all of those things that we truly want and truly feel like we came to this planet to create, and then it kind of gets squashed down the way. But when you're a kid and you're thinking, and these things are so real, you're living these things out in your head, we call it playing pretend. But I did the same thing. I was accepting awards. What I did all the time was get my babysitters or my parents or whatever to pull me around from room to room, like I was on tour, and I would get out in each room and sing.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt so real. I feel like when I get up on stage now, and like I've played, you know, some big arenas and whatever, I've done some awesome things. I have that exact same feeling that I had when I was a kid that I do on that stage.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like it all comes so full circle. And I think that when we're thinking about the things that we want and the things that we desire and the things that we're trying to call to and bring through from, you know, from that divine energy, just to feel like it's already actualized, because in that other realm, in that upper room, in that higher dimension, it already is. Mm-hmm. So if you can bring that creative energy forth, like it's real, like you did when you were a kid, I think that that's true alignment in a lot of ways.
Totally. 100%.
Yeah. I love that thought. That's a really cool thought. So you were diagnosed with cancer at a very early age.
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 17. I was almost 18 when I was diagnosed.
Wow. So it was like teenage years, dang, almost adult.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. That probably was.
No. I mean, everybody always says, you know, I'm sorry that you went through it, but I always tell people, don't be sorry, because, you know, I got to experience life from the other side of the looking glass. You know what I mean?
Whoa.
Like I remember when I was little in Hudson Bay, and there was this girl, she was so beautiful. She was a lot older than me. She ended up passing away. I can't remember what kind of cancer she had, but I remember I was probably like 5 or 6, and she was walking into the store, and I was going in after her. And I remember looking at her, because she was bald. And I was like, "Mom, why is she bald?" Like, I remember like pointing and I wasn't trying to be rude. I was just, I didn't know why. Right. And, you know, and I remember like when I was diagnosed with cancer and I lost all of my hair, I remember that moment and being like, oh, I remember what it feels like to be that girl. You know what I mean? Now I know what it feels like to be her, you know, because like I would walk out with no wig, I'd be bald. And I remember people would point at me or talk or whatever, you know, or like people would be like, oh, did you shave your head for cancer? And I'm like, no, I have cancer. And I remember there was like a group of boys that, I was driving my Trans Am. That's what I had. It was my first car. And, I had like a red bandana on and my T-tops were off, and, we were driving my red car, and this group of guys in this, pickup truck, they pulled up beside me and they were pointing and laughing at me. I don't know why. I still don't know to this day why they were pointing and laughing, but like, it gives you so much perspective and it really like humbles you, you know? So like it makes you a better person. It really does, right. You know? Not that anybody can't be a better person just by practicing being a better person, but I think it just made me a better person a lot quicker, like a lot more wise, not even that I'm like better. It just made me better than who I was originally, you know? And yeah. Not even like I was a bad person. I've always been a good kid, very like respectful and polite and like, you know, wise and stuff, but it definitely made me even more so. So I think it was actually one of the best things that could have happened to me. And it made me realize that I was going to do what I wanted to do in the form of my career. So everybody always said like, you can't do music because that's not a real career. You have to go to school. And at that time I was looking at going to school. And
Oh no, I was just going to say, it seems like it expedited a lot of processes for you.
Yeah, it really did. Yeah. You know, I decided that I was going to do music after that. And I mean, I wrote a lot of songs about my experiences that other people connected with, which was really great. And it just made me grow. And, you know, it made me like not take life for granted. You know, I'm always kind of like the person that like does, I'm not a planner. I kind of do what I want, like when right. I want. And I've always been, and I became that way even more so after, you know, cancer, you know, like my husband and I, we bought a van, lived in it, toured in it for a while. And, yeah. And it's just like, I kind of don't think about things. I'm like, yeah, let's do this, you know? So it was really good. And it's kind of funny that you're talking about being a people pleaser. Because so my aunt, she has this, like, it's like emotional, personalities behind certain types of cancer. And the type of cancer that I had was Hodgkin's lymphoma. And in my aunt's book that she got, people pleaser was the number one, like symptom, personality symptom behind that cancer.
Okay.
Which is crazy.
No, it's not crazy. Because I was debating whether or not to ask you this question. Mm-hmm. Cause it kind of is along those lines. So I'm actually really curious now to know what you think about this. Like my question was going to be, what is cancer to you? Because we know what it is like medically, in a sense of like, it's kind of the uncontrollable dividing of abnormal cells. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But is there like a spiritual aspect to it? Because you hear people say sometimes that there's like this mind body element to cancer, like this kind of overloading of something to the system that causes the body to, you know, break down. So like stress could cause that, or low vibrational elements and, you know, and thoughts that kind of abuse the body, like imbalances and such, mm-hmm. That could potentially be healed through other thought processes and other, you know, higher vibrational alignment patterns. Mm-hmm. And some even go as far to say things like, some of these imbalances could be left over in our energy systems from even like past lives, which is why someone may be more predispositioned to getting cancer, especially at an early age. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious to know what your thoughts are around that, because you were a kid when you were, or I mean, kind of a kid when you were diagnosed. Like there is all of those different aspects of it that are intriguing.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I 100% agree. When my aunt sent over, I don't think we still have that, but she sent it over in a text. And I was like, and my mom was the one, she sent it to my mom, and my mom was the one that told me. And we all know, like all of everyone in my family knows that Kelsey is a people pleaser. It's just what it is. and so, you know, I 100% agree. I think any sort of like ailments, disease and or anything like that is stemmed from some sort of emotional trauma that we carry with us, that we have. Like my husband, he got shingles when we first got the van and started to tour, and he is a high stress person, like the most stressed person that I've ever met in my life. He is a high achiever, but he also has like a lot of stress because he just is. And it's, and I'm not that way. Like, I try not to stress myself out too much over situations that I can't control, because what's the point in that, you know?
Yeah.
And so like he got shingles, and like one of the, like they just, the doctors even said, like, have you been stressed out lately? He's like, yeah, I'm like 15 out of 10 stressed out, you know? And I think like, no matter what it is, I think we hold some type of knowing, or it's like my mom, she had a stroke. It was like a freak stroke. It was her carotid artery separated when she was 42 years old. And my mom was a very healthy person. You know, she like takes care of herself. She works out every day, like very healthy. And she had a stroke, and she said that she always knew from a little girl that she was going to have a stroke one day. And it was a massive stroke. Like, the doctor said she'd never be able to walk again. 3 months later, she was running a half marathon. So nobody's going to tell her, like, you know, what she's going to do. But I do believe that we hold some type of energy. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know, like, to me, like cancer, whether it's, I can't really say, I don't know. 'Cause for everybody's experiences is different with it. You know, I had a friend that passed away from cancer, and I can't tell you what that was. I mean, he inspired me to no end. But I don't know what the purpose of his passing was, 'cause he passed when he was 21, 22 years old.
That's the element of it that makes me, first of all, so sad that he died so young. I'm so sorry about that. But there is that, that aspect of it when it comes to passing that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's hard to say why you continued on and why he wasn't able to.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, we look at death, we have this one kind of perception of death, and that's that it's the end, mm-hmm. you know? And so from our viewpoint, where we can look at that, we can say, well, it's not fair. It's not mm-hmm. fair. And yeah, to me, I'm like, yeah, it isn't. It isn't fair. He should be alive and be able to experience everything we are too. But there's that element too, where it's like, gosh, there's got to be some kind of contract or some kind of other existence that he was ready to elevate to another part of his healing. I don't know, mm-hmm. you know, 'cause it's interesting. Like you're pointing out the people pleasing aspect for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing how your energy is being released of that through your songwriting. I mean, you even said writing that song was like an energetic release for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like the way that you're processing through your life, you're healing those things that are causing you to have some of those blocks and some of those ailments. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, well, was there a different kind of healing that had to happen for him in order to achieve some of those things that needed healing for his soul? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's that piece of it, you know, mm-hmm. that's, I think we're all striving to understand. Right.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. I think like that to me, I don't think I'll ever like understand, but you know, one thing I do know is that like, you know, his legacy lives on, and, you know, his family keeps his spirit and his inspiration alive, and they inspire others. So it just kind of, it's hard
healing.
To say.
He's healing everybody else too.
He really is. Absolutely. His presence was a very huge energy that helped a lot of people. So, you know, I don't know, you know, what his passing was for, but you know, he definitely made a big impact in my life. So
that's amazing. What was his name?
His name was Matthew Cook, and they have the Fight Like Matt Foundation. And his family keeps it alive, and he had osteosarcoma. So he lost one of his legs, and so osteosarcoma is kind of like one of those it's a very hard cancer to beat. I think 20% of people that get it survive. And then if they get their leg cut off, it's like, and then it goes to their lungs, it's like a 5% survival.
Oh my
and that's
God.
That's what happened to him.
Oh,
but,
horrible.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, he honestly took it like a champ, and he just always wore a smile, and he, you know, just his family, now his foundation helps other people that have osteosarcoma. So it's a really, they've created something super beautiful in his memory, and it's just, you know, they're amazing people.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Well, we love him. Matthew Cook, you said.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, sending up some good energy to Matthew Cook right now. But he, I've been thinking, actually, as morbid as this sounds, I've been thinking about death a lot lately. Mm-hmm. It's a very kind of confronting thought, but also like a very freeing thought. If you can look at it in a certain way, it's like, we do have such a perception, like I said a minute ago, of death being an end, but it's such a teacher in a lot of ways to kind of keep us on our toes, like what we truly want, what we want to accomplish in this physicality. But I just have this thought. I'm like, I've been watching that show Surviving Death on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen it, but there was the whole episode on like near death experiences, and these people have these beautiful, beautiful experiences outside of their body and in connection with this beautiful source energy. And I can't help but think that when we leave this physical body, that we still are alive. I think we're just more alive. And so instead of thinking of death as an ending, I think of it as kind of like a coming to. Mm-hmm. And so instead of saying that someone's dead or whatever, I call them the more alive ones.
Yeah.
Because I really think that. I really think that you just kind of step back into that wholeness that's kind of in that that higher dimension, you know, that manifest state that is kind of coming through us now that we're trying to connect back to. Mm-hmm. Like that's when we step back into it, you know, and that's when you're most alive. So totally. I feel like we're the dead ones.
Yeah, totally. It's so true. 100%. Like, I mean, have you ever heard of Esther Hicks, Abraham Hicks?
Yes, girl. Are you kidding?
Yes. Come yeah. On. I know. I love her. She's so great. Like I listen to her all the time. My husband and I, and it's funny because like my husband is a very like science brain and I'm a very spiritual person. He calls me like his little hippie. And it's so funny because like, I remember this was like when the beginning of the pandemic hit, we both lost like all of our income. We didn't know how we were going to. We had to move out of Nashville. I'd been there for 5 years and it was just like the most heartbreaking experience ever. Sure. My husband was on like a cross-country tour and he lost all of that. And it was just kind of like, oh man, what are we going to do now? And so we were like in this funk, this energetic funk, which is like, so not who I am. And it was just like stress weighed us down all the time. Or we let stress weigh us down all the time. And I remember we were driving across the country because we were going to pick up our van that we had bought.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you know what? I haven't listened to Wayne Dyer in a long time. And I love Wayne Dyer. Like, I mean, my mom got to go and see him at like live and I was so jealous of her. She said it was the most amazing experience ever. But we put it on. He's like, this is really good. You know, he's like, typically I watch like these, you know, they're more like more motivational speakers, but he's like, I've never heard of any of these people. And then I was like, hey, we listened to Wayne Dyer for like half the trip. And I was like, they let me turn like you onto something else that I have not listened to in a long time. I mean, like, we're going to listen to Abraham Hicks. And we listened to some podcasts and he's like, this is some crazy SHIT, but
it is probably for a lot of people.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And he was like, but it's amazing. Like what she is saying is so like, she responds so quickly to the questions that she's asked. And it makes so much sense. Like if you just stand back, I mean, a lot of people probably think that it'd be like we said, crazy, but you're just kind of like, and like, what's the problem? And he was like, what's the problem with thinking this way? Like, it's not going to do anything to harm you. You know, if you think like in this way, it's only going to really just make your days a lot sunnier. And so, you know, like, I mean, like if anybody's listening, like to this podcast that has never heard of Abraham Hicks, you have to.
I love going to check it out. You can go on the on YouTube and you can pull up Abraham Hicks, like the little manifestos. And
yeah,
it's just like the videos that people make of her, you know, just talking. And oh my gosh, I when I'm driving long distances or like going to a songwriting session or whatever, like I will turn that on and I will crank it and I will put the windows down and I will be like, yes, like how, like just trying to keep my energy, my vibration high. And she has such a way of kind of bringing you into that alignment and making you feel so connected with that, with the divine. So totally. I'm all about it. I love it. I love her. I love the manifesto. So definitely go check out Abraham Hicks for sure.
Yes.
Speaking of your husband, your latest release is a song you released with him.
Which one?
Breathe Again, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. That song's awesome, by the way. Thank you. Awesome song. You just put out so many awesome songs. But it's kind of about going through kind of the hard stuff to get through or get to those breakthrough moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the chorus. I think I have the lyrics. Wait, it says love and compassion, angels on earth, people that help you heal through the hurt. No, it ain't magic. Trust me, my friend. I know this road ain't even close to an end, right?
Yeah.
Soon you're going to breathe again.
Yeah.
I love it. It's so beautiful. So I'm curious, like what your healing process looks like or looked like for you kind of coming out of cancer, going into music, what helped you breathe again?
I think honestly, realizing that like playing the songs, like I used to play these songs out in public that I wrote when I was like going through like my darkest times, like with, you know, going through cancer. Because like, you know, I say that it was like at the end of it, you know, like it was such an amazing experience. Like what I took from it was, it was an amazing experience, but like going through it, it was super emotional. Like I think it took me years to get over like the emotional trauma that I got from it. Sure. You know, I think the most amazing experience for me and like, you know, what just kind of helped me process it all were the songs that I wrote and then playing those songs out and having, like, I was only 18 at the time and I would have like these older men and women and even younger ones, but it was kind of like more, I don't know, powerful to have older people like in their 50s, 60s, 70s come up to me, you know, after I would sing these songs out, because I would perform them at coffee shops or like church, a spiritual center that I went to. And people would come up to me and be like, you know, I've had cancer, somebody that I've known had cancer, and I've always felt that way about it, but I never knew how to say it. And it was just kind of like, that's exactly what I want to do. Like that's
me chills.
Yeah. So I think I really got my aha moment realization during that. And it just kind of like fed the fire. Like it just kind of kept me going and made me realize what I want to do and why I want to do it and how I want to do it.
I love that. And what a like little healing ball of light you are, because kind of like what we talked about earlier, how some of these blocks within our systems and these ailments kind of bring out sometimes that sickness in us, just that stagnant energy. And I think when people can't heal those things, sometimes it keeps them sick, makes them worse, whatever. And you are giving people the words to be able to process and to be able to heal and to be able to move some of that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is really powerful. And I think that you are given such like a true divine gift.
Yeah.
Through your music and your creativity.
Yeah. Thank you.
So in your song, Who I Was, the hook line is, I gave you what you wanted, but that wasn't who I was.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about the people pleasing aspect of that. But for the sake of this podcast, which is all about discovering and healing the parts of ourselves that kind of keep us from living in that true alignment with who and what we are and with that source energy. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately being able to create from that space after all you've been through and all that you've learned so far on your journey, who are you now?
Oh my goodness. I feel like that, especially being pregnant now, I feel like that's changing every day. But you know what? It's kind of interesting. So like I told you before is like, you know, I've been singing since I was 3 years old and I never dreamt of, like, I never was the girl that dreamt about getting married. I never, ever knew what that was going to look like for me or if that was going to happen, you know? And you know, having kids, never knew if that was what that was going to look like. Never knew if that was going to happen. Really thought that it actually wasn't going to happen, to be honest. Yeah. And like my husband was okay with that because we're both pretty focused people and especially on our music. But, and so when we found out we were pregnant, we were like, I was like, oh my goodness. Like, okay, now I have to like, I've always put my identity into being an artist and a songwriter. Like, always. That's who I am. I'm never going to be anything else, which I was completely okay with, and happy with and all that sort of stuff. And I think like now I'm just kind of like, oh, okay. Like I always kind of felt like, and this is like no negativity. Cause I love kids and I've always loved other people's kids and I love smushing them and snuggling them and all that stuff. Like, I love that. Like, I used to babysit my cousins all the time and I loved it. Like we had so much fun, but, I always felt like I wanted to do something like that. I mean, being in the music industry is such a, it's very, you know, you go through so much, you know, it's like you go through so many promises that you learn were never promises and just kind of manipulations. And it's just, you know, you deal with a lot of sociopaths and like people that are operating on a low energy, you know, low vibration. And it always ends up affecting you. But I always felt like, you know, what I wanted to do for people was just my life mission. And that, you know, other people's life mission would be having kids. And not even that it was a negative thing towards it. It's just that it's just not something that I ever saw myself devoting my energy to or my time to, because I really felt like I wanted to help people, you know, help other people. So this last little while I've just been processing, cause I was kind of like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Like being a mom, like that's, you know, really hard to be a mom, a good mom. And I want to be a good mom, you know, and focus on your music at the same time. Like, what does that look like? But my husband, he's so great because I was just like, cause I was expressing myself and I've been getting a lot better at expressing myself, like just my feelings and stuff, not just having to write them down in a song. Yeah. I told him like, what am I going to do? Like, you know, what if like my music is over? Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Cause my whole identity is music. And he was like, well, I'm not going to let that happen. And, you know, and he's done music for like the last 5 or 6 years. And he's done really well for himself just for being in music for such a short time. Cause he's just a very business-minded person. And, you know, he was just like, I'm right now I'm in the process, I think, of like, you know, understanding that I'm someone who is always going to be doing music for the rest of my life and trying to help people and help heal people. But I think I'm like, you know, like cancer, like, and I'm not looking at this baby like it is cancer, but raising a child is a whole completely new experience. Right. And I take it very seriously. It's a big life decision that you're making, you know what I mean? Sure. To bring another soul into the world. So I think it'll just give me more, and not that I'm going to use this for that, but it'll just make me more wise and just, you know, more schooled into what I can do for my music and what I can say to other people. And who knows where it's going to lead me. Honestly, I think I might like at this point in my life where I'm kind of just like letting things come as they come. You know, I realized that I'm especially after finding out that I'm pregnant, that I am not in control of like anything, you know?
Oh, it's so true. And it's those times, like, I'm sure it's absolutely terrifying thinking about having a kid and doing that and the whole music aspect, but it's like, you know, you said my whole identity is in that. And I so relate to that. I feel like we've come to this planet with a mission and it's to create, and we were given this gift. We love to do it. And that's the way that we express. Right.
Yeah.
But it's like, why can't we be everything, you know, mm-hmm. not like everything, not why, not, I don't want to be a lawyer, but why can't we just be everything? Why can't everything be our thing? And I think we get so stuck on one thing for so long that it becomes the thing that defines us, because that's the thing that we love to do and we're doing it all the time. But it's like, I just know, I can just feel it from you that you're going to have this baby and you're going to be like, oh wow, this is my thing too. Mm-hmm. And this is like, I think you can be everything.
Yeah.
And I think that God just kind of puts all these things, in our way, or not in our way, but in the forefront of our minds, is to give us a focal point and to bring us into like the next phase of evolution for ourselves, the next phase of consciousness, and
totally
in the higher version of ourselves. So I can't even imagine. Music's already done that for you. Your battle with cancer has already done that for you. I cannot wait to see what this baby is going to offer you and where it's going to take you in your songwriting and how you express yourself. I think it's just going to all go together in such a beautiful way.
Oh my goodness. I have been thinking about this, like just what you've been saying for the last little while. And I 150 million times agree that it's just like a new energetic shift. And I think that like just myself personally, I've been pushing that away because I've always thought you can't be a mom and do music at the same time. It's always like a no, you can't. Well, I guess I'm going to have to be, because like, yeah, that's just what I'm going to do. You know what I mean? And so being a mom is not a bad thing. You know what I mean? Like,
amazing moms in the world. We need right? them.
Yes, totally. It's so true. And so, you know, like, I'm very excited. And I think that I'm just going to let, you know, everything happen as it's supposed to. And I'm going to dedicate myself to my music and to my child and, you know, to creating a beautiful life that I've always wanted to create it myself. It's just going to look a little bit different than I thought. And there is nothing wrong with that. It's more exciting, actually, you know?
And
so
I can't imagine how much like deeper and richer your songs are going to get, because I just feel like this is going to be a whole new mirror and reflection of probably things in yourself that maybe you don't even know are there to heal, or yeah, that are coming up, or that there's just a whole nother box of gifts to open up through this. And yeah, I just can't wait to see how you're going to express them and what that's going to look like. You.
Thank you. I know.
It's so amazing.
It's going to be fun.
If you had one thing you want the world to know, what would that be?
Oh, life is short. Like, I think that that's what I would want people to understand. Like my husband always, you know, cause he'll always be like, are you not stressed about this? Like, how come I'm so stressed and you're not stressed and we're kind of going through the same thing. And I'm like, well, what's the point? Like if I'm living at like energetically at like a low vibration, like how is that going to help anyone? How's this going to help the situation? How's that going to make me like happy? Like it's not going to make me happy. So I think that, you know, you are not promised tomorrow. Like that was one of the things that I learned going through cancer at a young age, because I met a lot of people that didn't live tomorrow. And, you know, I think that, you know, life is short. You are not promised tomorrow. Like do what you like love, you know, do what makes you happy. Like, don't be stressed. Stress is just a temporary thing. You are going to get through whatever you're going through. Like, understand that, like, you're going to be okay. And don't let anything bog you down, because, you know, once you, you know, start understanding and living through more of a relaxed state of mind, everything's just going to come a lot easier, and you're going to be living a lot easier and breathing a lot easier, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Kelsey, thank you so much for coming on here today. Where can everybody find you online?
Well, thank you for having me. And also, you complimented me this whole time, and I feel like I never got to compliment you back, but I'm also such a huge fan of yours. And just like your light and your energy is just so nice. And I love that you're doing this podcast. This is so great. And your music and your voice is so beautiful as well. So I also wanted to extend the good energy back towards you, because I was like, that is, I felt so like nice. I wasn't able to.
No, that is so nice. Thank you so much.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for having me today. It really made my day brighter. So thank you.
Oh, good. And, me too. Yeah,
good. I'm glad. You can find me at Kelsey Kulik anywhere. It's just KalseyKulyk. And I'm the only Kelsey pretty much out there. So you'll be able to find me.